Good morning, good morning, good morning. Thank you for being here for our session. My name is Shelley Alcorn, CAE, and I'm your hostess for the beginning part here. We would like to welcome both people here in the audience and those online. We're currently broadcasting to over 400 locations in the United States and internationally. Because of this, if you have questions from the audience during the question and answer periods, we would ask that you use the two standing microphones located one here in the front and one in the back so that the online audience can hear your question. And if you're online, feel free to use the chat window. I will be moderating that. And if you have questions, put speaker queue in the front and we'll be sure to get your question answered. A few housekeeping notes. Please silence your cell phones and all electronic devices. I know if you're like me, you're stoked that Jane McGonigal is here. Her session is going to start at 10:30, but please stay till the end of this session at 10. You'll have plenty of time to get down to the general session room. We don't want people leaving early. And finally, we want to make sure that you complete the online evaluations for this session. If you can complete them here on site while your memory's fresh, that's great. But if you do need time to reflect, they will be available after the conference. Links to each session evaluation can be found on the session details page, on the conference agenda online, on the mobile app, and for virtual conference attendees, you'll find a link on each session page in the virtual conference center. So now I'm going to kick it to Kate, who's going to introduce herself and her fellow presenter, and we will go through lecture capture and accessible technology.
Aaron's actually going to introduce us.
Thank you. Okay. Is this on yet? Okay.
You can just get started in that microphone, maybe.
Sure. So, hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We're really honored to be here and appreciative of you joining us for our session amidst so many other great sessions. So, Kate and I are going to talk today about our experience at Worcester Polytechnic Institute and using capture technology, not only as an accessible technology for students with accommodations, but also to support accessibility from design. So my name is Aaron Ferguson. I'm the Director of Disability Services, and Kate Beveridge is the Assistant Director of the Academic Technology Center. And our collaboration actually stems back to the early 2000s when we were at the University of Connecticut. We were working together in academic support, and we were focusing on a program to support students who are on academic probation. And a few jobs later, a few half decades later, we are now at Worcester Polytech in our current positions and trying to be more proactive, using technology on the front end before students are on academic probation to create some opportunity for more proactive accommodation, and even to support a social model of academic support, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So for those of you who saw Sir Ken Robinson yesterday, you'll understand my reference to the sort of half-decade time span. But he also made reference to a lot of, really important points that support our presentation today. And one of those is the idea that you can never predict human behavior. That you never know what people are going to do given the right opportunity. And so really lecture capture technology is one sliver of technology that we've used to really try and open up a lot of opportunity for students and their learning experience. So we've started our presentation off displaying the WPI seal, which features our motto, Lehre und Kunst, which is German for theory and practice. Theory and practice really is at the heart of our project-based learning at WPI, and we really try and balance that. We've tried to balance that in our approach to using lecture capture technology at WPI, too, and we've also structured our presentation around it. So to give a little bit of idea of the theory and how we're putting it into practice, and we realize that new technology comes with a learning curve, not just on the technical side, but also, it includes some attitudinal and emotional barriers to adoption. So we'll talk about some of the logistics and setup of our system, as well as some of the programs and outreach that we've done to try to address some of those attitudinal barriers. One example of an attitudinal barrier that we've tried to work around is the idea that special education is anything but thoughtful application of best practices for learning. And while lecture capture doesn't necessarily cover all the bases in terms of differentiated instruction, it definitely gives some opportunity for the materials that are presented to be interacted with in differentiated ways for students. And so the idea of universal design, which many of you have probably heard in theory, in practice, we really try to incorporate this simple tool at the front end in the design phase to really open up opportunity for our students as well as our faculty. And we also talk about using the lecture capture implementation not just as a tool for accessibility, but to inspire and to spark a conversation on our campus about a social model of disability support and ways that we can really encourage a shift in perspective from focusing on the accommodation and the limitation that a student brings to the environment to really facilitating opportunity for students to reach their potential.
So one of the things that I find really helpful when I attend webinars, this is for our face-to-face audience as well as our online audience, is the ability to have a conversation, to share resources, to share ideas. So we've set up a Today's Meet as a back channel. You can find that at todaysmeet.com/WPI Educause. It's not case sensitive, but I did capitalize Educause in the slide. And we encourage you to use that to share your ideas, resources, things that your campuses are doing throughout our presentation. Aaron and I won't, unfortunately, be able to look at it during our presentation, but we will be checking in afterwards. So if there are any questions that didn't get answered or anything you'd like some follow-up on, we'd definitely be happy to reach out to you afterwards. So if you could include your email address as well, that would be really helpful. When you log in, you just have to enter in your name. If you could include your email address, as I mentioned, and then you can chat. So this is for, you know, ways for our two audiences to connect with each other. For our online attendees, you'll still use the Q&A and the capture for questions to ask us. We have also loaded our materials onto the Educause website for our presentation. This is a shortcut URL that will redirect you there. It's goo.gl/EJJFR8. And then we're also going to take the opportunity to do some polling as well. So we're going to be using lecture tools for that. So you can get out your mobile devices and get ready to text area code 734-666-0004 when we pose a poll question. And well, there's also a browser version, and those of you with iOS devices, you can actually download the app if you want. So we'll give you some time to set that up. But if you go to my.lecturetools.com, for those of you with web-enabled devices that don't want to text in, you can use the demo code DEMO2929. And then there's no password required, and then you could submit and join our presentation, which I'm also actually displaying the slides there as well. We'll bring it up again when we actually start polling as well. So the phone number is 734-666-0004. And the URL is my.lecturetools.com. And you want to use demo2929 for the email address, and no password is required.
Right. So while you're looking at all of these neat tools and setting them up, I'll tell you a little bit about our background and the context that we're coming from at WPI. WPI is a private institution in the context of a 13 college and university consortium in central Massachusetts. Over the past 4 to 5 years, we've had quite a growth spurt in our enrollments, both on the undergraduate level and on the graduate level. And this year, we welcomed to our campus what, by all demographic standards, is our best undergraduate class ever. They are the most diverse class, they're the highest achieving class. They're also the largest, at about 1,100 students. So 1,100 of those undergrads are our first years. We've also hired a lot of support staff and faculty to support those incoming students, and our faculty to student ratio is about 14 to 1, which isn't bad. It's pretty good, but with subjects in the STEM fields, we really have a large amount of content that students have to cover. And so what we're going to talk a lot about today is how lecture capture can help kind of bridge the gap between, you know, a focus on content-heavy curriculum and really help enhance that faculty-to-student interaction that we hold so dear.
So some of our challenges, we operate on a quarter-based system during the regular academic year for our undergraduate courses. It's even more confusing that some of our graduate courses and programs operate on the typical 15-week semester, while others operate on a 7-week quarter as well. As Aaron mentioned, our student enrollments are constantly growing. Class sizes are getting larger, and that really means an increased demand on faculty's time. We do not have at WPI graduate students or TAs teaching courses. It's all the faculty. They're also doing the advising, the academic advising. And Aaron mentioned our project-based curriculum. They're also advising a number of projects. And this emphasis on project-based learning means that faculty and students are both very busy with coursework. So in terms of lecture capture, faculty may have more time if students can go back, in terms of office hours, if students can go back in and review those captured lectures. And then this last bullet is italicized. We're not going to be speaking to this today just because, you know, we're limited in the amount of time we have, but WPI has been offering, quote, distance courses since the 80s. Obviously, online has been, you know, more recent than that. The old method, we would mail VHS tapes home to students and they would view at a distance. And what we're really talking about is, you know, can lecture capturing tools be used to package multimedia and to harness the best practices and tools for online delivery? And we think so, and we're excited to see some new updates that Echo 360 is rolling out that will allow for even more interactivity in our online courses. So at this point, we're going to bring up the polls. So we want to ask you, who is in our audience? And let me just share that. So hopefully you can, once Aaron gets it up on the screen, it's number three, input three.
Oh, down there. Okay.
Okay, good. Thank you. We can step away a little bit from the podium. So why don't we do it up? I'll read it out loud to you. Oh, that's the original laptop. Oh, that's what he was doing. Sorry. So for those of you who are texting in, if you want to, again, the phone number is 734-666-0004. And then you want to enter in 480-770. And then A, you know what, I'll bring it up on the other laptop. That's okay. A, if you are an academic technology or IT staff. B, if you are a disability services staff. C, if you're continuing education staff. D, if you're a librarian. E, if you're a faculty. F, if you're a student or a researcher. G, if you are a corporate vendor. And then H, I realize we won't be able to get everybody, but H if you're in the other group. And while we're waiting, I'll bring up the up on this screen. And it looks like we have some folks, some polls already coming in who represent academic technology staff or IT staff. Okay. So we've got 11 out of 55 people, and we're not going to spend too much time on this. We can actually come back to it. Why don't we go on to the next poll, and then we can come back to this one if need be. I apologize for our technical glitches. Whoop, we want to skip that one. All right, so let's just find out for our attendees, both virtual and face-to-face, where you are in your campus lecture capture deployment. So if you could, the same phone number, 734-666-0004. And then for those of you who have joined the session via web-enabled device, you should actually just see the poll come up on your screens. And then you want to text in 480 788, and then a space. A, if you have no lecture capture system deployed on your campus. B, if you're a newbie, maybe 0 to 2 years, which is a long time in technology. C, if you are experienced, 2 to 5 years have been using lecture capturing. And then D, if you're a veteran, 5+ years. And let me display the results on the screen. And just for reference, WPI has been using lecture capturing, the current tool that we're using right now, since 2007. So it looks like we have a mix of audience. Most people who have responded are newbies or veterans. And then we have a couple folks who do not have a lecture capture system deployed. And then we have, again, a few others who are experienced. So that's great. So let's go back to our presentation. So our setup, I just wanted to throw a visual of our setup. If you want more technical specs on our setup, if you visit, there's a handout that I prepared. It's a PDF format. It describes some of the information that we provide to faculty when using the system. It also includes some of our equipment. If you'd like a more comprehensive list of the equipment that we use, definitely feel free to reach out to me. I have some business cards available, and then our email addresses will also be in the presentation as well. Basically, our setup is such that anything that a faculty sources to the projector in the classroom, which they have to be using anyway because they'll have a room full of students in most cases, will be sent to an appliance device that is installed within our podiums. So this includes computer, laptop input if faculty prefer to use their own device, iPads or other tablets, document cameras. All of our classrooms also have a built-in pen stylus as well in the monitor. And then we also have the capability to plug in external video devices via an HDMI input. All that is recorded during a class and then published to a server, which then sends the packaged multimedia at the conclusion of the class to a learning management system. Or if our faculty decide not to use the learning management system, they can also publish either an RSS feed or a customized course web page to their own personal web page as well. And then students can view that on their computers or their mobile devices.
And we have a wide range of classroom sizes that this is deployed in. We have classrooms that range from 25 to 30 students all the way up to 300. These are some photos of examples of that. And just to give you a sense of where the technology is set up in the classroom, there's on the top left, the little black camera is the capture camera, seated the bird's eye view just behind the projector. And it all integrates into a podium that looks like this. One factor or one option that we don't have at WPI, which some other schools have, a pad that is pressure sensitive that the faculty member could walk back and forth on and the camera would pan and follow them. It's quite costly. We have on occasion had staff that will, when we have presentations that need to be a little more produced, man a camera as a workaround for that.
So at this point, it doesn't look like we have any questions from our online attendees. Do we have any questions from our face-to-face attendees on our setup or our implementation at this point? Yes. So the question was, how many classrooms do we support? I apologize, this will be in a later slide too, but we have 18 lecture capturing classrooms with the hardware out of 60, so it's about a third. We also have a site license for desktop software, which is installed in all our remaining classrooms, and then faculty can install it on their office or home computers as well. Yes. So the question was, if we want to install a camera into a classroom, is that a big process? And basically, our classrooms are on a 5 to 6 year renovation cycle. So when we are renovating classrooms, we're building in the support for, and basically the cabling and the power in the ceiling to equip a classroom with lecture capturing so that we can install the appliance and the camera mid-cycle if need be. So that we do have Aaron showed it on the slide before, you can see it in the top left-hand corner. It's just a mounted video camera. The specs on what that are is available on our conference webpage. Really just a bird's eye point of reference. If folks do want to plug in using that video input HDMI source into the appliance, that would be manned, and faculty can either do that, or we have student videographers that work for our department that can also do that by request. One more question, yes.
Hi, you mentioned hardware appliances and software site license. Mm-hmm. What hardware and what software are you using?
We're using Echo 360, and so we have their appliances and also their personal capture software. Okay, we'll take more questions later on throughout the presentation, but I just, in lieu of time, I want to move on. So on the screen, we have a spectrum of course delivery modalities. We adapted this, this spectrum from a recent publication in Internet and Higher Education. And on the left, we have a traditional face-to-face environment, all the way over to the right, where we have MOOCs. What Aaron and I collaborate on and what we're presenting on is this area in the blue, technology-enhanced courses. And then what WPI is supporting using lecture capturing tools is highlighted in the orange here, but we don't have time to present. We would be more than happy to follow up offline via email. Catch us in the rest of the conference to hear, you know, how we're using lecture capturing for our blended and mostly online courses. And then we have the gray area, which represent MOOCs, although the color is a little bit off. but WPI at this time is not producing any MOOCs, but there's a lot of great dialogue on our campus about whether we should be. We do have a number of faculty who are wrapping MOOCs, and basically what that means is they're taking MOOC content, generally videos and interactive material, and then wrapping a project around that. So student takes a MOOC either at the same time as the project-based course, and then they'll present that piece of paper. That means they've gone through the MOOC, and then the WPI faculty, to demonstrate that the students have learned it, typically independent study credit, they'll do some sort of project or paper or design or build something around that. In terms of our Echo 360 implementation, in the technology-enhanced courses, at the bottom of the screen, we have the technologies used to augment those technology-enhanced courses. For our online courses, or mostly online courses, it's the primary delivery modality. And then in the MOOC area, we have a question mark there, only because WPI is not doing anything with MOOC development at this point. Although, like I said, there's a lot of great dialogue happening on our campus, and we're confident that our lecture capturing setup could be used to leverage MOOC development in the future.
So to strip away the technology for a second and look at the augmentation on the student side, on the right, where the delivery modality is electronic, there's definitely a high level of autonomy necessary in terms of the student's interaction with the material. We won't go into accessible material formats and those kind of things. But looking more at the traditional face-to-face setup, typically, when a student is meeting with a faculty member in the classroom, once they leave, whatever they've gotten in their notes is what they get. And so they can go back to the faculty member for clarification on information and that sort of thing. But with a growing number of increasingly diverse students, there's probably a lot other better spent time outside of the classroom. And when the lecture capture is implemented, students can take that capture, go back to the source for the content, and so when they're working with that content, they can speed it up, slow it down, they can have it on demand, watch it many times. When they're working with each other, they can study in groups, go back to the content without having to align office hours and work with a faculty member. And when they do connect with the faculty member, they can really focus their time on implementing the content and really interacting in a much more detailed way to really apply what they've learned in a meaningful way.
So apart from recording a lecture and having it available to students, we have other functionality available that fosters student autonomy and that are integrated into our system. We have remote cart services available. This is all by request. We're not doing this automatically, because I know we'll get that question. Cart services are communication, access, real-time, so that's synchronous captioning. We also have transcript and post-production captioning available, and so the transcript would be a downloadable version of the what was said in the recording. And then captioning, you can see we have a screenshot. just to see what the captioning module looks like in one of our captures that's being taught this semester, actually. And it's right below the bird's eye video camera of the room. And so if you actually want to see what one of our classrooms looks like, so, well, this is a great example. The system is also compatible with screen readers. And then there are keyboard navigation shortcuts for those with limited mobility. And then different viewing themes. So this screenshot represents the dark viewing theme, but there's also a light viewing theme as well for those with low vision.
So for those of you not familiar with traditional accommodation services, usually students would disclose a disability to an office like mine, and then each term would have approved accommodations they need to disclose and present to a professor each time they take a class. And one very popular accommodation is note-taking. For various reasons, students may have fine motor issues, processing speed issues, and note-taking is somewhat limited for them in the classroom. And so traditionally, a volunteer might be identified and paid to submit their notes to that student. But if a student can access the capture, really circumvents a lot of the need for volunteer note takers. And we've seen a dramatic drop in our requests for volunteer note takers. It's a cumbersome process, it can be costly, but I think on the even better, it allows the students themselves the ability to improve their individual note-taking skills. So I've worked with some students with their lecture captures to talk about how they can better develop some compensatory strategies so that in future, when they don't have a capture, they can have a better set of notes. We've just recently started live streaming to personal devices as well. We have a few students who are have low vision and are able to see the presentation right in their laps. They don't have to sit anywhere particular in the classroom to see being up close, and they can really zoom in and see the material that's being presented. And in terms of chronic illness, we have a good amount of students who have sporadic, unpredictable illness that would come up in any time, and despite their best efforts, they may miss class, and having the capture there really kind of circumvents some difficulties. And in addition to being the best class ever, our first year class seems to be the most accident-prone class ever, surprisingly, and we've had a remarkable number of injuries and concussions that impact note-taking, test-taking, and all sorts of things. And in my experience, when a capture is available or can be turned on, it really makes a huge difference for me administratively, for the faculty member in terms of catching up, and especially for the student in being able to have that peace of mind that they can recover and the lecture will be there and they can catch up when they're ready.
So in interest of time, just because we still have a lot to cover, I won't spend a lot of time in the slide. Actually, right before our presentation, I added some more details into the bullets. But I did just want to play on what Sir Ken Robinson said yesterday about the right way to innovate. And in terms of lecture capture, lecture and class activities don't just happen during that 50-minute or however long your regularly scheduled class meeting time is. Content can be delivered 24/7. Students are looking for it 24/7. So there's no right way to lecture capture. And so we find that we're using it in a lot of innovative ways at WPI. I do want to just call attention real quickly that we have built in lecture capturing into WPI's emergency preparedness plan. Just this past April, with the Boston Marathon bombings, we do have a few faculty that live in the Boston area. And when the city was on lockdown, the faculty were not able to make it to campus to teach their courses. And so they were actually able to use lecture capturing from with the desktop version from their homes to make sure that students didn't miss a class. Again, our 7-week terms are that classes meet every day. You miss one class, there's a lot of content to be covered. So that was great for us.
So in above and beyond the law, we have a lot of international students who are English second language learners. And a lot of the time when students have English as their second language, working in the academic context can present as a functional limitation similar to a reading-based learning disability. And a lot of the free access to the material to speed it up, slow it down can really help those students. Again, in the category of unpredictable things, family emergencies come up a lot, and students are able to use the capture to catch up then. And just learning style preferences in general. We're assuming that students are aware of what their learning styles are and the best ways to use this material. And we do a lot of work individually with students on that edge. But whether you have a disability or not, if you have an auditory learning style or a visual learning style, the capture really allows for multiple ways of interacting with the material as well.
And then we have faculty who need temporary accommodations that are using the system as well. I did get her permission beforehand. The same faculty who was in that screenshot example a few slides back in mid-August, right before the start of the official academic year, she fell off her horse and broke her hip. And that required surgery, and she wasn't able to make it to campus for the first few classes. And so she was also able to record from home to make sure that she could deliver that content to her students. With the increase in student enrollment at WPI, we have departments that are using lecture capturing tools to record generic advising material. There's a lot to cover when faculty are meeting with students to go through their academic registration and academic advising process. So if there's some of the more generic material that can be pre-recorded that students can watch prior to that one-on-one session, then there's more time to focus on the actual student, their transcript, their course load, and their schedule. We have faculty who are using the system to record their office hours under the assumption that students may not all students may be able to attend their office hours due to other class or work conflicts. And so they're able to publish those office hours for students because, again, the assumption is that if one student has a question, there's probably a few more that might have a question. And then we have an example here, hopefully this plays, of individualized feedback. So recordings that are not published to the entire class, but rather individual students. And this is used in some of our more project-based or writing courses that we'll just play a few seconds of an example recording for you. This is by a real faculty member. Sorry, the internet's a little bit slow. If it doesn't load in a second here, we'll come back to this. Yep, slow network connection. That's okay. It's more concept. Basically what it is the faculty introducing the student's paper and saying he really enjoyed the paper and wanted to provide some feedback to her on specific points within the paper. Loading.
And I know that anecdotally from students that verbal feedback can be really helpful rather than just the marked up red paper with the comments scribbled down, or even lengthy written comments don't necessarily always convey everything that the professor intends for the student to hear or understand.
So one thing that our system does, we also provide downloadable versions of all the content to students, so if they do have slow network connections. But my hope was that the connection would actually be speedier for this presentation so that we could show you in the actual playback interface and to be able to show you how students can jump around and review a capture. But it looks like if you'd like to see this example, why don't you ping us an email and we'll be happy to send that to you so you can view it offline. Apologies for that. So at this point, do we have any questions from anybody? Yes.
Dave Mazinski, University of Missouri, St. Louis. What type of training do you have for faculty? Is it something that is mandatory, something that happens several times a year? How do you get them in the room to learn this stuff?
So our support model, and this is a great setup for a future slide that we have, we provide a lot of one-on-one support. We're very flexible in doing trainings. We do schedule formal classroom sessions, but we find that faculty are more available if it's as needed. And so we'll run around to classrooms as time allows and as classroom availability allows. We will check all recordings. We'll provide student assistance as needed for first-time faculty users. As we continue to grow, I'm not sure that support model will be scalable, but that's what we're doing right now. And we have an online question as
we
well.
We do. We have an online question. When you're live streaming to mobile devices, is it just the vodcast only, or is it full rich media going to mobile?
It is full rich media. We have students using laptop mobile devices, meaning when they're actually in a class due to low vision, is laptops, iPads, and tablets. For students that are watching on their phones, it's kind of a, you know, for them, they'd probably want to download the vodcast after the class is over. One more question. Yes. I do know this, not off the top of my head, but I believe we have already exceeded at just the start of this academic year, we're a month and a half into the academic year, and we've already exceeded what we did in the entire last year, just because we've seen so much growth this year alone that we weren't expecting, which is surprising. Last year, I believe we had, and I could be wrong on this number, so I'd have to double check, but I think it was about 2,100 course captures during the academic year. All right, so we'll have more questions at the end, too. We want to, real quick.
question was, the annual cost to maintain this? Yeah.
Can we chat offline about that, if you don't mind? Okay.
To speak to the question about training, one of the biggest opportunities that the implementation of this technology has done for us is give us the opportunity to reframe our conversation about disability. So traditionally, schools implement a medical model of disability support that really focuses on the individual coming to our campus and bringing the problem with them. An economist, I saw a talk by the name of Simon Sinek, focused on the idea that people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And under the medical model, what we do is accommodate the individual student, and why we do it is because of all of these very well-intentioned laws under the ADA and those kind of things. And those laws have done a lot to open the conversation about accessibility and disability support. But I think that if we focus on that lowest common denominator and really focus on the functional limitation of each individual student, we're missing a big opportunity. And so what we really try to do at WPI is focus on a social model of disability support. We'll talk a little bit more about faculty helping faculty and students helping students from a peer mentoring kind of perspective. But under the social model, we kind of change things around. We focus on the ceiling rather than the floor. We're looking at where students' aptitudes are and where we can allow them to navigate freely around an environment or through a course and look at the barriers surrounding them. And we try to bring in the community to, you know, be a piece of that support in understanding themselves and others. And so lecture capture technology not only is the sort of technical means to really circumventing some of these individual needs for accommodation, it's also a pretty implicit message that we're sending to students that, you know, we're going beyond, you know, trying to integrate things ahead of time for you. And there's a lot of students who appreciate the efforts in the lecture capturing availability by design. Another example of sort of an implicit message, this is sort of an aside, but to give you a visual representation of this, the handicapped logo or icon that was developed in the 60s that I hope you're all familiar with is one that we've been having a conversation on our campus as well. And when I ask audiences what they think of when they see that icon, usually the first thing they say is handicapped, okay. Then they think immobile. Then they think sort of passive. And they think about the disability and the inability. We're working with a nonprofit out of Boston called Triangle Inc., who actually are working to redesign a subtle but I think significantly different symbol to represent less of the impairment and more of sort of an empowerment model for folks with disabilities. And it was actually developed at Gordon College with a philosophy professor by the name of Brian Glennie. And a Harvard Graduate School of Design student, Sarah Hendren. And I'm going to click on it in a second, but just think about this picture that's currently there and the sort of impairment that it focuses on versus sort of a more empowered kind of vision of a person with a disability. So, you know, sort of the shift from impairment focus under the medical model to an empowerment model where everybody's sort of playing a part in helping themselves and each other out in accessibility and kind of addressing some of the barriers that we see on campus. So speaking back to universal design, just real quick, it's not an imperative. We don't mandate training for faculty. We encourage, we start with the folks who are open to this kind of idea already. And we encourage a regressive accessibility, which means sort of by design, integrating accessible technology or accessible features and then allowing students to peel back the layers of accessibility when need be. Who are our typical users? I don't think there are typical users anymore with diverse populations coming to our campus. And how can we really create opportunities for students to meet the learning objectives rather than trying to craft the one path for them to take to get where we hope they go? How can we sort of open up opportunity and focus maybe on just supporting their functional limitation in a context proactively rather than having them feel sort of a global impairment?
So real quick on this slide, you know, we want the system to be as the least possible disruption on our faculty as possible. They're very busy. They come into the class. They turn on the projector, which they have to do anyway. They turn on their wireless microphone, and we'll speak more to that in the next slide. And then instead of using the chalkboard, they would actually use the podium pen tools, their tablet devices, or the document camera for annotations. And we have a lot of faculty, not a lot of faculty, we have several faculty at our campus who teach various versions of failure analysis. And so they're always asking us what will happen if the technology fails during class. And we have a little joke that we say within my department, technology happens. Hopefully you'll get the analogy from Forrest Gump, the movie, or even a Volkswagen Jetta commercial, probably 5 or 6 years ago maybe, that was safe happens. So we like to think that technology doesn't happen, but we know it does. And so we don't have any redundancy built in, but we do have, you know, we're constantly checking. We check every single recording afterwards to make sure there have been no technical glitches. We do a lot of outreach. The biggest problem for us really has been human error, microphone issues. Either the batteries die in our wireless lavalier mics or faculty forget them altogether. So we don't have built-in microphones built into our classrooms at this point, although we are talking about that for the future. And then chalkboard boards can't be captured. We talked about that. Scheduling. You know, with classes being booked all in the morning, you know, all day from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., it's very difficult to shuffle around rooms or to get in there. And then student Q&A, just as we're seeing right now with our synchronous participants, they you know, you'll all have to come up to the microphone. It's the same thing with our students.
And faculty are also concerned about some non-technical components, and we work with them individually on some of these. But a lot of faculty are presenting new research that hasn't been published yet. They're also concerned a little bit about their students' privacy, and there are some workarounds in terms of, you know, taking the audio off when, or even editing after the fact out some confidential information or things that students don't want to be recorded on. Faculty are concerned about students not participating in class because of that, or that they're not even going to come to class if they're worried about being captured, which Kate will talk about in a second, isn't actually the case. And then there's the fear of technology. We do have quite a few technophobic faculty at a technical school, believe it or not, but there's a great opportunity for mentoring there. You know, that despite the fears of finding your lecture remixed on YouTube, that it really does have some benefits that outweigh those concerns.
So we only have a couple minutes left, and I know data is important. So we'll breeze through these, but we can take some time for questions while we're doing this, because you can download the slides. They're available on our EDUCAUSE presentation site in the PowerPoint, as well as some handouts that we've included are there as well. No questions? So should I go through this data? Yes. I'll repeat it.
What client are you using for your capture?
So the question was what client we're using. We're using Echo 360. And they have a booth downstairs in the exhibit hall. Yes, in the... What size staff do we have? My team is a team of five, including myself. And so we do the training and the outreach to the faculty on the use of the system. We have a team of three who provide the technical support and doing the scheduling of the captures. And then we have another team of three that does the classroom installations.
And Disability Services is comprised of myself, our assistant director, and a shared administrative person.
And then green shirt. Yes, it does. Yes, so the question was whether our license allows for faculty to install on their personally owned devices, non-WPI owned devices. Yes. Yes. Okay, so there were two questions there. The second one, which I'll answer first, was whether the staff that I just mentioned, those numbers, were dedicated. And no, they're not. We're supporting other things, including the learning management system, clickers, and just, you know, technology instruction in general. And then the other question, I'm already blanking. How much editing? So there's not a lot of editing. We do have faculty who, they'll travel, they'll become ill, and something will happen, and they'll want to bring up a recording from a prior year, and we may do a little bit of editing there. But most of the time, the faculty who use it the first time want to continue using it, and there's not a lot of editing that we do. There, you know, occasionally we'll edit out some dead time, faculty end early, or if they give a quiz in the middle of the class or something like that, but it's not common.
We have one final question from online. Have you defined an acceptable success or failure rate for recordings?
To us, anytime there's a failure, it's not acceptable. And so there's a lot of investigation that goes into that, whether it's our problem, a technical problem, the faculty problem. I will say that Echo360 support is amazing. They're very responsive. They get back to us. I've had support interactions with other companies where you don't know who you're dealing with, just tech support technician number 1, 6, whatever. And so that's been very, very helpful in our implementation. And so, again, this slide you can view, but I do want to just leave you with this last slide, if that's okay with Aaron, because I think we spoke a lot on that other slide, for you to read. Mm-hmm. And definitely, reach out to us if you have questions. I have cards here. I don't know if you have some cards. We have cards up here. If you want to reach out to us, touch base with us. We're here for the rest of the conference, and our email addresses are published on the EDUCAUSE website, and I'll just bring them up here as well.
Yeah, and as much as we've tried to use this as an opportunity to start a conversation beyond just the technical pieces of using lecture capture on our campus, we hope that you'll engage with other folks on your campus as well as with us and with everyone else who was here to view our lecture today.
Thank you.
Thank you.